Welcome to episode 168 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Today's episode is the last of three in which we're taking a look at three lenses that I've picked up in the last few months and have not really had a chance to talk about yet. In the first 2 weeks, we looked at the Canon 135mm f2L prime lens and the TSE 90mm 2.8 tilt-shift lens. Today, we'll take a look at some shots from the new version, the 2 version of the 14mm f2.8L lens. And we're just going to jump right into that and take a look at some shots from this ultra-wide-angle lens. So, as with the last two episodes, I have a shot of the lens in my online gallery, so let's bring up image number 2016. As a quick reminder, for those of you that are new to the podcast, I usually call out a number with each image, and this is a unique number for the images in my online gallery. If you're listening to the enhanced version of the podcast, the images will automatically change on your computer or your iPod, so you might not need this number. If you follow the audio, though, maybe you subscribe to the MP3 file, or you want to just come back and listen, take a look later. You can also look at the images on my website, and you can do this by inputting the number that I call out into the field at the top of the. There's a menu at the top of the website. And in there, there's a podcast menu. And then at the bottom of that, there's a little field where you can type in numbers. If you type the number that I call out into there and then hit enter or click the button, then you'll basically jump to my image at my website at martinbaileyphotography.com. You can also just locate this podcast in the table on the podcasts page from the same menu there. And, once you're in there, there are thumbnails to each of the images as well, so you can just click through from there if you want to. So getting back to the lens, in the photo, the first thing that you'll notice is that the front element of the lens is big and round and sticks out way past the front of the what we would usually think of as the front of the lens. And, of course, this means that there's no way to put a protector filter on, or any kind of filter for that matter. So it's a little bit scary to use. You can also see in the photo that there's a special lens cap for this lens. And I tell you, as soon as I'm not shooting photos with it, I basically put the cap back on to protect that front element. The other thing that you'll be able to see is that the lens hood is built in. You can't take it off. It's basically just solid there on the front of the lens barrel. And also, this is the reason for the shape of the lens cap. It kind of it drops around the front of the lens hood and clips into place. You'll also see that red ring is there around the front of the lens, the top of the lens in this picture. And that's basically the ring that's showing us that this is an L lens, which is Canon's high-end professional lens range. Not all, but most L lenses are dust and moisture proof, and this one is no exception. I'm not looking forward to the time, though, when I have to use this lens in wet conditions, as it may mean that I have to wipe that front element, which I don't usually like to do. All of my other lenses have protector filters on or UV filters, and so I don't mind giving those a wipe in the field so much, but I just don't like to even take those off and wipe the front element of any lens. It's going to happen. A small amount of moisture I could probably blow off with a lens blower. But if it gets really wet, I'll just have to wipe it while I'm outside in the field there. And, that's going to be a little bit scary. But, I can imagine that there'll be times when maybe like shooting a waterfall or something when there's spray and, it's going to get wet. Or even just shooting in the rain, because the rain comes down at any angle at all, it's going to hit that front element. So I'm just going to have to get used to that. And you know, hopefully be able to blow most of it off and just be very careful when I do have to wipe with a lens cloth in the field. So the first photo that I wanted to look at today is image number 1996. This and the next photo was actually shot with David Lee's lens and not my own, which I'd actually bought the following weekend. I'd met up with David, one of the active participants in our photography forum, in a park here in Tokyo, and we'd spent the afternoon on November the 30th shooting together. David had asked if there was any glass that I'd still like to own, and when I said the 14mm, it turned out that he'd got one in his lens in his bag. So, after we'd been shooting for a while, we'd been, you know, basically photographing the autumn colour. We walked along and noticed the sun shining through the leaves, creating nice shadows. And I went for my 16-35mm, the f/2.8-2 lens, intending to point it downwards to make the shadows seem to radiate out, as we can see in this shot. And at that point, David handed me the 14mm, which I used instead. The effect of the radiating shadows was, emphasized a little more, I think, because of the additional sort of angle that this the 14mm gets, and allows us or affords us. The diagonal angle of view with this lens is 114 degrees. The horizontal angle is 104, and the vertical angle is 81. And one of the worst problems that you usually see with ultra-wide-angle lenses is that the image corners tend to look as though they're flowing away from out of the frame. And the 16-35mm 2 version has corrected this really well. And I was looking forward to getting home and seeing how the 14mm 2 version had handled this. And on close inspection on the computer, I was kind of surprised to see that the top corners had a little bit of this. But that's not the surprising thing. It's to be expected with a lens this wide. But the surprising thing was that the bottom corners showed hardly any distortion. And, I haven't had time to look into why this would happen yet. I'm thinking that it's probably something to do with whether they're closer to you or further away. But it seems that the various conditions, there are varying conditions that create this distortion, and it's not just the actual, the lens. It's more about the contents of what you're photographing. It was about this time that David looked behind us and noticed a beautifully coloured tree canopy, above us, which we can also see in image number 1997. The tree trunks here that we can see seemingly converging inwards from the bottom corners are actually about 45 centimetres apart, that's all. There was not really even room to get your shoulders in between these. And, yet the extreme wide angle of this lens makes them look much further apart. For this shot, I pre-focused to about 1 metre, setting the lens to manual, and then I should note that 1 meter is pretty much infinity on this lens. The camera on the top of a tripod, extended the legs of the tripod fully, and then sort of pushed the camera mounted up on the tripod up a meter or so into the tree, between the trees. And then release the shutter with the camera mounted on the tripod. So it was a fair way up in between the trees, but still, although they're only maybe even 30 centimeters to 45 centimeters or so apart, because I got up there a little bit, I managed to get closer to the canopy, which is really not as far away as this image would make you think it is. And, it just got me a little bit more space between the trees. But also, I couldn't get in very far between the trees anyway. So, I just thought it would be a good idea to sort of to take the whole setup away from me by sticking it on the tripod. And I could also, by doing this, the closed three legs of the tripod actually sat and could be lodged in the V between the two trees where, you know, where the tree trunks split into two. Actually thinking about it, I'm saying two trees. I think if I recall correctly, there it actually is one tree, but it's just two boughs of the same tree. So you can probably appreciate how close this thing is together. So about this shot, you know, in general, it's probably going to be one of my favourites for the year. Pretty soon I'm hoping to put together a list of either the top five or top 10 images for 2008. And when I do, this will definitely be included. I love this shot. I also inspected this shot pretty closely for distortion. And here I found very little. Again, puzzled a little bit, as to what might be causing this, making it a little bit contextual. But I'm kind of thinking that it's perhaps, like I say, to do with how far things away are from you. Here, you know, most of the canopy is pretty much the same distance from us, and there's none of that sort of flowing off of the corners. There is a little bit of chromatic aberration here, though. Especially the top corners, as we look at it, there's a fair amount of chromatic aberration, or CA, as many people abbreviate it to. And, you know, it's not bad. There's just a little bit there, but it's definitely there. But I think I was already pretty much sold. You know, I'd been wanting to pull the trigger on this lens for a while, and having actually tried it out and then taken a look at the images on the PC and seeing how little distortion there was, for the angle of view that we have here, and the fact that it doesn't suffer from extremely bad CA, I was pretty much sold on this. And, you know, I was having a hard time resisting picking up my own, and, you know, I managed to sort of, you know, fend it off for a total of 1 week. In fact, about, I think it was 6 days, and I went to pick up my own the following weekend. I took the lens out straight away for a test run and shot the rest of the images that we'll look at today on that following weekend, the first of which is image number 2011. This was shot in a local park, again looking up into the autumn tree canopy. Here, though, I've taken advantage of the huge depth of field that this super wide angle lens affords us, and I focused on a patch of leaves just above my head on the left side of the frame here, but then with the aperture at f9, I've rendered the trees right up, you know, into the trees reaching up into the sky there, totally in focus. Again, these trees are really not that big, though, but the angle of the lens makes them look a lot bigger. We've seen that, you know, again in this image, we've got that convergence of the subject. You know, the tree trunks really look as though they're sort of converging in on us, and I'm really enjoying that look. I've shot this sort of image quite often over the years, and this is one of the ways in which I use the 16 to 35 millimeter a lot. But the 14 millimeter just takes it to another level, and I'm really surprised at the difference that just this 2 millimeters makes. The warped world effect, as I think I'm going to call it, is of course, you know, not just visible when looking up, but also when pointing the camera down. As with the first shot that we looked at, with the shadows sort of radiating out. Let's look at another example, though, in image number 2013. Here we can see a yellow carpet of ginkgo and other fallen leaves. Again, this is really just a simple image from a stroll in the park, but has become quite an effective image. It's, you know, it's having the ability to do something different, even in relatively, well, I don't really want to say boring, but uneventful locations, that was one of the most tempting things about this lens. You can, by the way, see a little bit of that distortion in the bottom corners where we can see the image seeming to flow out of the frame. Again, though, not a big deal. It's just the very, very corner point, you know, the very corner part of the image. Most certainly visible here, though. And, you know, again, there's none in the top corners, adding to my confusion and thinking that this is probably something to do with how far things away from you and things like that. But I don't know. I'm sure there is a good reason, and I'm probably going to spend a little bit of time to research this on the web soon. If anyone knows why this distortion or this sort of flowing out of the frame is contextual, you know, happens only in under certain contexts, then if you could let us know on the forum, that would be great. As I got to the far end of the park, the sun had dropped well below the horizon, but was casting a warm light onto the clouds in the sky, as we can see in image number 2014. Again, I used the ultra-wide angle to make relatively small trees that were literally right in front of me, just look that little bit further away and taller. And I note here that I exposed for the sky to keep the colour of the clouds and to allow the trees to sort of pretty much fall into a silhouette. And you can probably see a little orange spot near the centre of the bottom of the frame there. And I basically left that in. I thought about getting rid of it in Photoshop or in Lightroom, but I left it in as a hint that there's actually something more interesting in the shadows there, because there's actually hordes of people playing games and finishing up like a game of baseball and stuff in this bottom area. There's, you know, between these foreground trees and the trees in the distance, it's actually a playing field, like a community playing area. So it's literally teeming with people at the end of this autumn day. They can actually be made out pretty well in the full-sized image. And although I'm yet to print this, I'm thinking that there'll probably be a nice little Easter egg in a print of this once I actually get around to looking at that. Shortly after this, as I was finishing up a can of hot coffee from the vending machine, I noticed the moving clouds going across to a position where they'd pretty much lined up with the tree to my left, and so I shot image number 2015. This tree, again, is almost vertical in reality, but the lens has bent it over, making it look as though it's leaning into the shot. The clouds behind the tree kind of look like leaves on the tree, with a bit of a stretch of the imagination. It was getting pretty dark by this point, though, so I'd upped the ISO to 400 and shot with an aperture of f8 for 1/25th of a second. I could have got everything in focus at f5.6 and probably wider, but I'm getting the, you know, I'm still sort of trying to get the hang of the depth of field with this lens. I haven't had a whole lot of time for photography since. It's getting a little bit frustrating, actually. This whole year has been a bit dry, with one thing or another, but I'm not going to go into at the moment. But, you know, I wanted to take a look at one last shot from the following day, which is image number 2020. Not quite a silhouette, but with some nice long shadows. This is a scene from a shopping afternoon in Ginza here in Tokyo. I arrived at this street that they usually close off to cars during the day at the weekends. Just as the sun was reflecting off a building on the left of the street as we look at it, I've actually arrived at this point, at this location, just at this very time a few times, feeling a little bit lucky here. The sun is actually over on the right of the scene, hidden to us here by the buildings on the right. And I'd been shooting for a minute or so, waiting for people to walk into the shot. I wanted people with a nice even spacing so that they could make those long radiating shadows again. And as I waited, between each shot, this little girl ran into the scene, and she was a little bit excited, getting ready for her mum to take a photo. We can see her mother there to the left, getting ready. I think she's the one with the yellow coat, probably the little girl's coat. But you know, for a moment there was this gap behind the girl where there were very few people, and so the sun was reflecting off the road, and it enabled me to really, just for a few moments, to get a quite effective image with, you know, an obvious subject in the middle there. Not one for street photography as such, but, you know, when an opportunity like this presents itself to me, It's as exciting as any of the other kinds of photography that I do. And, you know, it made it a little bit more exciting to have this incredible angle that the 14 millimeter gives us. So, you know, in all, it's a fun lens, and I'm really looking forward to getting out with it much more. One thing that I wanted to note before we go on, I spoke earlier about the fact that there's no filter on the front. But actually, you know, that with this lens, because there is no way to put a filter on the front, there's actually a gelatin filter holder on the back, the rear of the lens. It's like a little frame, and you can cut gelatin filter paper, the plastic, and drop it in here. And so what I've done is I've actually bought some 3 pieces of ND neutral density gelatin filter, and I've not done it yet but I'm going to cut it out so that it drops in there perfectly, and find the little holder for that to take them out into the field with me, so that I will have an option to slow things down a little bit when I need to. And yet obviously I won't be able to, because I can't put a neutral density filter on the front of the lens. So I've got that sort of planned. I think that's going to be another way to open up my possibilities with this lens. Apart from that, though, you know, it seems that, you know, whatever you point this camera at, the camera at with this lens fitted, you can make an image worth looking at. It's just so different. It's quite a removal from much of the photography that I usually do, often shot with much longer lenses, with very shallow depth of field. But again, you know, this is all part of the fun. The lens is really well built, as you'd expect from an L lens, of course, and it's not that big, so it'll be one of those lenses that's easy to drop into my bag, and you know, it'll probably make its way out with me a little more than some of the larger lenses on for certain types of trips where I'm maybe the main focus is not going to be photography. Really looking forward to getting it back out with it again, though, and you know, just seeing what else is possible with it, with its wacky perspective, and you know, just. And everything about this lens is really exciting at the moment. So looking forward to getting back out with it again in the very near future. And of course, when I do, I'll share some images with you at that point. So a few pieces of housekeeping before we finish. Firstly, the deadline for signing up for the Hokkaido workshop for 2009 has come and gone. But we still aren't full, as the global economy takes its toll. So I'm leaving the links up to continue to, you know, enable people to sign up at mbpworkshops.com. If you're interested and still sort of sitting on the fence, note that the charge is actually slightly less if you wire the funds instead of paying using the PayPal links on the site. So mail me at workshops@martinbaileyphotography.com if you'd prefer to wire the funds, and I'll send you my bank details. Please don't wait too long, though, as the flight is actually filling up quickly. Now that booking's open, you know, you can start to book flights from 2 months before, which was really the reason for the deadline. That's now upon us. I booked all of the flights for our current participants last week, and the plane was pretty much already full. There'll probably be tickets available later, but the price doubles. I urge you, if you are thinking of coming and just sort of, you know, not quite taking the plunge yet, do get in touch as soon as possible, so that you can get your a normal priced or a cheap flight and everything. Of course, that's included in the price, but if you're on the fence, drop me a line soon so that we can get you on the plane. If we can't get you on the plane, you can't come. So if you're interested in joining the Winter Wonderland Workshop 2009, drop me a line at workshops@martinbaileyphotography.com as soon as possible. On that subject, you'll probably noticed last week that I was a little bit unenthusiastic about the blurb book that I made of photos from the 2008 trip when I mentioned it last week. When I looked at the book again in daylight, I was actually a little bit more disappointed with the quality than I led on last week. It seems that the printer heads either needed cleaning or, you know, there was simply not enough ink being put onto the page on all of the left side pages only. The right side is perfect, so it proves that the quality can be there. Anyway, I mailed Blurb and they asked me to send some photos of the problem, which I did yesterday, and so I'm now waiting to see what they say. And, you know, although it's pretty good, I would really like the book to be as good as it can, so I want to see what they say before ordering a larger batch. And, of course, I'll let you know what happens there. I'm not too worried if it's just a bad egg that sort of got through. If this is their overall quality control, though, I won't be using them again. So I'll keep you filled in on that as things evolve. Finally, a bit of a hellish week last week with regards to time. I have been working on a script to build RSS feeds for Cool Iris, the web technology that I've recently built into my website. And I wanted to be able to push one button and have the script go away and build multiple feeds for each album and category on my website. And then basically, you know, what I needed was to be able to link to all of those feeds from the various locations around the website automatically. You know, I'm not one for maintaining things, so I generally spend a little bit more time in the, you know, on the get-go to sort of to make sure that it's all automated. And finally, just after midnight on the 21st last night, I got it completed and it's all working really well. And now there's a bunch of additional links they're at the bottom of the menu. There's a menu that runs across the top of the screen at martinbaileyphotography.com. And when you're browsing images in the either thumbnails or the larger images in the gallery, you'll now see a Cool Iris logo with an arrow pointing to two more links. And basically what they are, it's one's for the category, and if you're in an album, then you'll see an album link, and you can just click on those, and that will then launch you into Cool Iris, and you'll see a full screen virtual wall with all of the images from that album or category displayed. If you already have the Cool Iris link, the Cool Iris plugin installed, you can actually, with IE, it doesn't get put there automatically, but you can actually stick an icon on the toolbar. And so what I've also done is I've made sure that now the RSS feeds are also contextual. So if you're in an album or a category, then Cool Iris knows about those. The browser knows about those without you even clicking the link. So if you hit the Cool Iris button in the toolbar, that's already there in Firefox, by the way, then you'll be launched into the exact place in Cool Iris, and so, you know, it couldn't really be any easier. And I just really like this technology. So if you haven't already grabbed the plugin, then, you know, I recommend that you do. The Cool Iris logo on the page will launch you in, take you to Cool Iris. But of course, it's really simple. CoolIris.com. Just type it into your browser, grab the plugin, and then come over to the gallery and take a look for yourself. That's it, though. A lot of housekeeping there. Sorry about that. As we are just a few days from Christmas 2008, I'll finish by wishing you all a very Merry Christmas and hope that you and yours have a great time over the festive season. And even if you don't celebrate Christmas, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.